Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
So you said you don't have any control over it. You don't really control where they end up. But by closing the workhouse, that left a lot less room in the city justice center for those federal detainees. I mean, would you see those two things as related?
Again, we don't have any control over where the federal government takes its detainees.
Okay. Do you still believe that he's definitely putting the city first?
You know what? I think he is in his own way.
I'm Sarah Fenske. 100 days ago, Tashara Jones began what may be the toughest job in town, mayor of St. Louis. Now, a lot has happened in that time, and she joins us today to discuss the good, the bad, and the complicated, and her plans for the next 100 days and the days after that. So, Mayor Tashara Jones, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good to talk to you, Sarah.
So it feels like it's been such a busy 100 days. What do you look at as your biggest accomplishment during that time?
Well, you're right. It has been a busy couple days. You know, when I ran for mayor, I ran to shake up the status quo and change our city. And we've been working hard to deliver the promised changes that we made on the campaign trail. And while I've ruffled a few feathers, I'm committed to building a city where every family, regardless of their zip code, color of their skin, or who they love or identify, how they identify, can not just survive, but thrive. You know, budgets are moral documents, and our first budget focuses on addressing the root causes of crime by investing millions in social workers, victim support services, supportive reentry services to make sure people who leave our jails don't end up back there. We zeroed out the budget of the workhouse in line with what I promised the community, and ultimately the vast majority of individuals in our jails do not return to ensure that we have to make sure that they are connected to services. We're becoming an active partner in development, not a passive one. I've worked with Automatic Allies and renegotiated TIF funds to redirect $1.8 million to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And I lifted the hiring freeze on city employees, and I'm working diligently with departments and personnel to recruit new hires to make sure city residents can get the services they rely on and deserve.
So I gotta call you out on this a little bit. That seems like more than one accomplishment right there.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
But maybe it's a sense of just how much has been on your plate. You know, I couldn't help but notice in your first month, you signed the Crown Act into law that protects people from discrimination based on having natural hair. You also vetoed tax abatements for two different projects in the Central Corridor. That all happened in the same day. Should that have sort of put the city on notice? Here's my priorities.
Yes, absolutely. By signing the Crown Act into law, that was a signal that we are going to make sure that we provide an environment where everyone, no matter how they wear their hair or how they look or what zip code they live in, can succeed in our city and take away some of the barriers that Black women have experienced who wear natural hairstyles, and also to the development community. Development is welcome. We are not against tax incentives, but we want to make sure if we are investing the city's tax dollars in their developments, that we are an active partner, not a passive partner.
Do you think there's been some grumbling from developers that you're vetoing agreements that were already in place, you're bringing people back to the negotiating table? Have they been very irritated by that?
Well, Jesuit Hall came back to the table, and we were able to negotiate a deal that I think that's a win-win for everyone.
You know, there's long been this attitude that this is St. Louis, this is not Beverly Hills. We should just be grateful that anybody is building something here. And particularly if anybody is building something outside the Central Corridor, let's just give them whatever it takes to get that deal done. Do you think that's changing, that St. Louis is becoming more attractive to people who are looking to build buildings and make money?
Yes, absolutely. St. Louis is becoming more attractive. NGA is going up on the near north side. We have businesses that have contacted our offices that are looking to relocate here. We also have a new meatpacking plant that's going to open in South St. Louis and going to provide jobs paying an average of $65,000 a year. I think people are seeing that St. Louis is that city on the rise, and they want to invest in it.
Now, you mentioned when you were going through your accomplishments there, you mentioned the closure of the workhouse, and this was a big deal in the campaign. But the Post-Dispatch has also reported that there have been some consequences that have come from that, and that is in some cases, detainees are being moved to places like Tennessee, Kentucky. They're further away from their families. In some cases, their lawyers describe just how far they have to drive and how complicated it is for them to have access to their own attorneys. It didn't really feel like this is a long-term solution to have people that far away. Is there a plan to do something that would take away those long drives for family members who have a loved one in jail?
Well, let me also state that the detainees who were moved away are federal detainees, and we have no control over what the federal government does with its detainees. We are making sure that our top priority is the health and safety of the detainees that we do have in our corrections facilities, as well as the officers, and we recognize there's a huge amount of work to be done to keep people safe.
So you said you don't have any control over it. You don't really control where they end up, but by closing the workhouse, that left a lot less room in the city justice center for those federal detainees. I mean, would you see those two things as related?
Again, we don't have any control over where the federal government takes its detainees.
Okay. So you don't feel like the city bears responsibility for those moves that it's making at this point?
We don't have any control over where the federal government takes its detainees. If they decide to move them, that's on the federal government.
So with the City Justice Center, that's obviously been a big focus for a lot of people in this city. I know it's been a big focus for you. The corrections commissioner is now gone. Do you feel hopeful that those problems, that that's going to be a better place for people to stay?
Well, our top priority is the health and safety of our detainees and our corrections officers. We inherited this problem, and so there's going to be a lot of work to be done to change and update the CJC. Again, we inherited a broken culture and a building that is in desperate need of fixing, so repairs and upgrades to the building will continue.
So you mentioned earlier this idea of budgets being moral documents. I want to talk a little bit about some spending, some related to the budget, some are not related to the budget. And I guess this is a good time for this. You have an announcement today that you're taking some executive action that relates to some spending. What are you going to be expediting with this executive action?
So I've been ringing the alarm since June about spending these federal funds that we received. And I have urged the Board of Aldermen to pass the $81 million in direct relief to get shots in arms, keep families in their homes, and improve public safety. But a month later, these much needed funds have been tied up by the president of the Board of Aldermen. But while he's obstructing these funds, the people of our city can't wait. So we have to get more people vaccinated, and we have to keep thousands of families in our city from being thrown out on the streets when the federal eviction moratorium expires. That's why today I'm taking executive action to direct nearly $3 million in local funding towards COVID-19 vaccination efforts and housing assistance resources for thousands of families while President Reed continues to obstruct urgently needed relief from St. Louis families. It's imperative that we boost our vaccination rates to keep people out of our hospital ICUs so people can get the care they need, COVID-related or not. And this action will expand mobile vaccination efforts and help the city acquire another mobile vaccination clinic to do more youth-focused outreach and events.
So this is local funding. This is not part of that $500 million the city's looking at in federal COVID funds. Why is executive action necessary to move this forward?
Executive action is necessary because we are still in the middle of a pandemic and the Delta variant is on the rise across our state. Again, I have been sounding this alarm since June that we needed to act quickly, and the president of the Board of Aldermen continues to obstruct this process.
And so this is a way of transferring funds from some local budgets over to others?
Yes, we are using existing funds to make sure that we can keep shots in arms, keep people in their homes, and improve public safety.
So I want to talk a bit about the president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed. Now, when you were running for mayor, you were asked, this was at a debate, who you'd endorse if you didn't make the final cut in the city's approval voting primary. Obviously, that didn't happen. This was a hypothetical. But here's what you said in response to that question.
I have had a long friendship with President Lewis Reed. We go way back to working at People's Health Centers under the late, great Betty Jean Kerr. And I know that at his heart, he definitely is putting the city first.
Now, that is from a mayoral debate. That's you speaking about Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen. Do you still believe that he's definitely putting the city first?
You know what? I think he is in his own way. However, I would implore him that it's time to stop playing political games and move this direct relief package forward. He knows what he needs to do. We have reached out to him time and time again, and we've been met with nothing but rebuffs. And even recently, he said he's not going to change one word. But, you know, if my attorneys told me not to do something, and I'm going to listen to my attorneys, I'm sure if your attorney told you not to do something, would you do it? So, you know, we have to remember that in these reports that we file to the federal government, the mayor's name is on those reports. So it is important that we make sure that we make every attempt to make sure that every I is dotted, every T is crossed, and we are following federal law.
And I want to just remind people of what you're talking about when you say your attorneys told you not to do this. This goes back to $33 million that he wants to spend on economic development, and this would use federal CARES Act funding for that. And this seems to be the impasse between his plan and what you want here. You're saying you will not move this forward if it has this money in it. And your lawyers have told you this is something you can't spend federal money on?
No, our lawyers have told us that the way that it is currently worded, which is general economic development, does not follow federal guidelines. It's not about the money, and it's not about the purpose of the money. It's just how it's worded. So all we have to do is just change the way it's worded, and then we can move forward.
And he says he won't change a word.
Yeah, that's what he says now.
So it feels like we get a lot of press releases sort of arguing about this back and forth. When is the last time you guys were able to sit down and talk about this face to face?
We just talked to him a couple of weeks ago. We have been reaching out to him to come sit at the table, to negotiate, to talk about the things that are that need to be fixed in the bill. And he has made his decision that this is the direction he wants to go. And it's unfortunate because we are still in the middle of a pandemic. The Delta variant is still on the rise. We have to get shots in arms. We have to keep people in their homes. And we have to improve public safety in our city.
And so with this executive action you're talking about today, that expedites $3 million, but there's still this huge chunk of federal money that's sitting there. What's going to happen next with this? He says he's not going to change a word. You're saying this verbiage is not acceptable. What will it take to break this logjam?
You know, we're going to continue to reach out to the president, and hopefully he has a change of heart.
We got a tweet from Jack. He says, I'd love some clarity from the mayor about how she plans to ensure vaccine availability and information reaches those in North City, especially in wards like the 21st, where the alderman has explicitly said he doesn't believe in vaccines. How can we help his constituents? I know this is part of this funding you're talking about today. Any specifics you can talk about as it relates to that plan?
Well, we will be making sure that we get another mobile vaccination clinic, and we will meet people where they are. Just last week, we were at Farragut Elementary School at a resource fair that was sponsored by Representative Kimberly Ann Collins. And we are looking for more opportunities to partner with organizations who do community fairs. Back-to-school fairs are about to start, so we're going to take this mobile vaccine unit and possibly purchase another one and be everywhere where people are.
Do you think people are open to it? I mean, if you make it super convenient for them, are there a lot of city residents who are going to be on board for getting these shots?
We hope so. I mean, education is part of the big push as well. It's not just, you know, hey, we're here with this mobile vaccine clinic, get a shot. No, we're going to take our health professionals with us, and our volunteer health professionals with us, and help them educate our community about how important it is to get vaccinated.
Our guest today is St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones. Today is her 100th day as mayor. It's an exciting milestone. We're glad she's here with us today. We are open to your questions and calls, like that tweet we just got from Jack. So what questions do you have for her? And what do you think should top her agenda for the next 100 days? You can give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at STL on air. We do need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation with the mayor. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And now back to our conversation. Our guest today is St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones. Today is her 100th day in office. Just before the break, we were talking a bit about vaccines. Mayor Jones, it seems pretty frustrating that we're still talking so much about COVID-19 right now at a point when we were all hoping to be past this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is frustrating. We had to reinstate a mask mandate earlier this week. And I feel people's frustration. But like I said, the Delta variant is spreading like wildfire across our state, and we have to do something to mitigate the spread.
Your counterpart, County Executive Sam Page, he faced a lot of hostility, even from people there on the county council, as well as a lot of residents over this. I feel like I haven't heard as much reaction in the city. Is there a sense from your office of how this is going over?
I haven't heard much reaction either. We are hopeful that our aldermen are also listening to the advice of the St. Louis Pandemic Task Force, which is, as everybody knows, a collection of federally qualified health center leaders, as well as our medical professionals who sounded the alarm just last week about returning to a mask mandate.
Mm-hmm. We just got a tweet from Joshua. He writes, is there an update in regards to a vaccine mandate for municipal employees? This is something that you've said you're contemplating.
Well, just a couple of days ago, we announced our vaccine incentive program for city employees, that they will get a $100 gift card if they get vaccinated after July 27th. So we are hopeful that will that will increase our vaccination rate, and then we'll, you know, evaluate situations as they evolve.
So you're at this point using the carrot, not the stick.
Absolutely.
So one other question that has kind of arisen in these last couple of days, there's been some prominent St. Louis businesses, some favorite restaurants have said they are now going to require vaccines for people to come inside. Do you see any sort of future amendment of the city order if someone is having 100% vaccinated indoor area? Is that something where the mask mandate could later be changed?
Well, you know what? I applaud those businesses for stepping up and issuing a strong statement about making sure that their indoor diners are protected, and that protects their staff and their staff's families as well. Ben Perimba, I believe, was the first to do this, and he's a good friend of mine, and I totally support him in that.
Yeah, Ben Perimba, I believe that is right. He owns Olio, Alaya, a lot of well-loved city restaurants. It'll be interesting. It seems like others could be now following him. We've now heard the Royale is doing it. People may have to get vaccinated.
Ben gets a lot of my money. Yes, he has great food.
Mine too. I want to go to the phone lines. We have a call from Mike, who's calling from St. Louis. Mike, hi, you're on St. Louis on the Air.
Man, yeah, thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Ms. Mayor. I'd just like to ask, you know, about, since you mentioned about the carrot anyway, but how are you going to incentivize these businesses to come to St. Louis? You talked about them, that they, you know, called your office and inquired about it, but how are you going to incentivize them to come here in St. Louis? And also, what are you going to do about the buildings that are downtown that are empty now? What's your plan to help fill those up?
Mike, thank you for those questions. I know downtown is a concern of many residents, sort of a two-part question there, but I'd love to hear your response, Mayor Jones.
Well, we are actively working with our new SLDC director, Neil Richardson, to make sure that we are providing an environment where businesses want to relocate to St. Louis and can succeed and thrive. We know that a lot of businesses had to shut down for various reasons during COVID, and that returning to a full staff indoors is still happening on a slow pace. All I can do is that, you know, the people elected me to not only be mayor, but I will be St. Louis's number one cheerleader. And so I will also make sure that I make myself available to meet and greet new businesses as they continue to consider moving to St. Louis.
So there are a lot of downtown residents who are sort of vocally unhappy at this point, and these problems definitely predate you taking over as mayor. But, you know, with so many fewer office workers down there, it seems like drag racing has become such a concern, street parties. It feels like a bit of lawlessness there. How are you feeling about the current state of downtown?
Well, we have met a couple of times with the downtown residents and have tried to address their concerns. We have increased patrols in conjunction with the sheriff's office downtown on the weekends. We made some changes to how our police are deployed during certain hours. So we are doing everything that we can to make sure that downtown is a safe and enjoyable entertainment district for everybody.
Bigger picture, crime is just always a concern in this city. And I know your priority is to attack the root causes of crime, but that approach can take years, if not a generation, to bear fruit. Do you feel like you have a short-term plan that is also helping people who are in neighborhoods where they're dealing with high crime?
Well, absolutely. I think that you can also get some short-term wins by addressing root causes. So, you know, we continue to support the Cure Violence program. We're also looking into focused deterrence and how we can use that as well to help deter those who the small amount of those who are continuing to live a life of crime. And also, after the first 100 days, what we'll be doing is concentrating on two things: on the city's infrastructure and rolling out a public safety blueprint that's informed by community needs. You know, the people closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And so we want to make sure that our public safety approach is one that involves community input.
So is that the focus for these next 100 days, infrastructure and then public safety?
100 days and beyond, right?
We're not going to solve either in 100 days, right?
Not going to solve either in 100 days. But again, we have an opportunity to address infrastructure needs as well as a public safety blueprint that is supported by the community. So we will be doing town halls and community listening sessions to listen to the community needs and try to address those within our public safety blueprint.
Within that public safety silo, it feels like the 911 dispatch system is the one thing every mayoral candidate agreed was a huge problem. Mayor Lyda Crewson agreed it was a huge problem. She thought she had a fix. We find out now maybe that fix didn't take. Why is this such a stubborn problem? It seems so simple on paper.
Well, the simple part, which is not so simple, is hiring more people to answer the phone. Unfortunately, we are hiring. We had a hiring freeze that I lifted, so there was a hiring freeze during the previous administration during COVID. This has been a problem over multiple administrations. So we are working actively with our personnel department, with our public safety director, to make some changes to 911 operators, hopefully we'll be able to solve that problem within my administration.
I want to go back to the phone lines. Representative Mike Person is actually calling. He's a representative of Ferguson. Representative Person, hi. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Well, good afternoon. I'm thankful that I was able to get in on this call. I must be one lucky guy with NPR because I've been able to talk to most of your elected guests. But congratulations again, Mr. Shaw, for winning the mayor race. It often seems like every time you try to do something, it's almost in their DNA to be adverse to whatever you're trying to do. So you want to make big steps, but of course it always ends up being baby steps. The changes I would like to see in North City, of course, is just urban development. I mean, there's like a football field worth of land every other block, and don't understand why. I don't know whether it's the LRA. I don't know whether it's trucking it's by the Board of Aldermen or if it's from the mayor's office. What do you think we can do to help expedite some kind of urban growth in the city of St. Louis?
Representative Person, thank you for that call, and we appreciate it. We always put your call through because we love hearing from you. Mayor Jones?
Yeah, so backing up, I mentioned earlier that we hired a new executive director of the St. Louis Development Corporation, Neil Richardson, who brings a wealth of experience in development and also doing capital stacks over at U.S. Bank. Neil's plan, along with it's not just Neil's plan, but it's our plan, is one that focuses on racial equity, one that focuses on North St. Louis and parts of South St. Louis that haven't been invested in decades, and focuses on reducing the racial wealth gap. And part of that plan is going to be developed with the community. We want to make sure that development happens with the community, not to the community. So we will be, he is in the process of reorganizing SLDC to make it more outward facing, to have neighborhood people who will be talking to people in the neighborhoods to develop action plans and develop development plans to move North St. Louis forward. You know, my vision for North St. Louis is just like what we see now in the Central Corridor, where there are cranes in the sky. I want to see cranes in the sky in North St. Louis. Mm-hmm.
You know, stepping back in our final minutes here, Governing Magazine recently did a really good profile of you, I thought, and it wasn't just about, it barely touched on you as a person, but it looked at what you're up against and what it's like being the mayor of St. Louis. They suggested the city is largely ungovernable. They quoted Kenneth Warren of St. Louis University. He said, quote, "The structure is set against a mayor of St. Louis being successful because they just don't have the power to move an agenda. Not a single mayor since I arrived here in the 1970s has been successful." And he's talking about the basic structural, the weak mayor structure that we have here in the city. Mm-hmm. Do you see an opening to move an agenda that he doesn't?
Yeah, so I would say to Dr. Warren, watch me work. You know, I think that that they say that this is a weak mayor system, but it's only as weak as the person that's in it. And I have already had taken some steps that previous mayors haven't. Like, for example, I meet regularly with the other countywide office holders and respect their positions, and don't try to push an agenda towards them, and to see also how we can combine our efforts and combine our resources to do things in a more collaborative way. We also are doing the same thing with St. Louis County. You know, there are so many things that we can be working on together to erase duplication of effort, to save both the city and the county and our also countywide executives money. So I think that communication and collaboration is key, and I look forward to working with my colleagues in city government as well as in our region.
So one of the little details in the Governing Magazine profile, they said it took a week to figure out how to turn on the lights in your office. Are things just so Byzantine over at City Hall that, I mean, have you learned things as mayor that would almost blow our mind about how things are run?
Yeah, I have learned a few things that would actually blow people's minds. I mean, this building is old. It was built in 1904. So we all know what happened in 1904 in St. Louis. The World's Fair, right?
It was a while ago. And
while it is a beautiful building, it is still old. And so there are things I wasn't aware of, you know, again, how to turn the lights on until I found an electrical panel two offices over. You know, I would say that while there are challenges, I see them as opportunities to make things better. And so I am happy that I have dedicated staff who show up every day bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and dedicated to serve the people of the city as well as this administration. So we will be tackling one problem at a time, and hopefully we will be able to see some movement and create a city where everyone can thrive.
Well, St. Louis Mayor Tishara Jones, congratulations on making it through 100 days, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you so much.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.